Hello and welcome back to the Damage Report on Debate Day, where I am thankfully joined once again by Emma Figland.
Hello.
How's it going?
Thank you so much for having me.
Good to have you here. We have a lot to look forward to through the course of this hour. We've got some new Bloomberg information. A little bit later on, we're going to get way ahead of ourselves and do a top 10 list of our suggestions for Bernie's VP pick. Should be a lot of fun. I talked with the audience earlier on during the live video that we do on YouTube before each show, and we had a lot of suggestions. We'll see if some of them make it onto the list. We don't know each other's lists.
Right.
So.
Okay. I have a prediction, but no. Just we'll wait for the segment.
Okay. We'll wait for the segment. Yeah. And we've got a candidate who's going to be joining us, a California congressional candidate, James Ellers, is going to be joining us a little bit later on. And we'll be closing out the show with Meanwhile In, a bit of news from around the world. I have other stuff I want to say, but you know what? We just got so much. Why don't we jump right into it? A senior advisor to Mike Bloomberg, this is Tim O'Brien, was on CNN's New Day and was sort of previewing a little bit of Bloomberg's strategy going into the second debate. You know, the last one was a disaster, so what has Bloomberg learned from that experience? Here's what he had to say.
I think Mike has to answer these questions forcefully and clearly. I think he has to be ready to be the target of everyone else on the stage. I think there was something of a circular firing squad in the last debate. I think he got his sea legs halfway through that debate, but he has to have his sea legs at the beginning of the debate tonight for sure.
Okay, so look, yeah, they acknowledged sort of he didn't do great. I would debate the point that he got his sea legs halfway through and what was doing very well for himself. That didn't come across.
Well, he said communism in a very, you know, whiny voice, so that counted as getting his sea legs, I guess.
Yeah, I guess in the second half maybe they focused on him less, and so that's good. But anyway, look, so that's just a little preview of he's going to try to do better, I guess. But what form does that actually take? Well, maybe it takes the form of attacking Bernie Sanders, even though bear in mind, just about 10 days ago, the Bloomberg campaign said, we're not interested in Dems attacking Dems or doing any of that. But apparently a lot has changed in 10 days, as he'll make clear.
Does that change tonight?
That does change tonight. And I think something changed, unfortunately, over the last 10 days. You know, it's a primary now. People are holding each other accountable. For the most part, we haven't gone after other Democrats. I think Bernie's campaign has run itself in a very thuggish way. There are very Trumpy-like aspects to the way that Bernie's been running things.
Or is it just that they're winning? I mean, is that what's changed?
No, because this happened before the debate. You know, Bernie's team put out falsehoods about Mike that we had to answer. Bernie has gone through this campaign without being held accountable. He hasn't been vetted as thoroughly by the media as some of the other candidates. Other Democrats on the stage haven't challenged him on the debate stage as much as they've challenged each other. And Bernie has a very trippy record, to say the least.
So sometimes I will choose clips hoping that the guest will get fired up about it, and you couldn't hear her, but while that was going on, Emma multiple times was like, what are you talking about?
I mean, that he hasn't been vetted. All the other Democrats have done is just go after him. And by the way, other Democrats, Bloomberg is not a Democrat. So stop referring to Democrats as if you're a part of that field. Mm-hmm. You're way less of a Democrat than Bernie Sanders is, who is on Democratic leadership, by the way. The idea that Bernie has not been vetted. Come on, every debate. How are you going to pay for Medicare for All? The bill that he is championing specifically, they spend like a quarter of the time at minimum at every debate saying, hey, you candidate, tell Bernie why his plan is unrealistic and going to be way too expensive. It's just absurd. And you know, I get that guy has to make his case for his candidate, and I'm sure he's getting paid three times the amount that other campaign advisors would be getting, because that's what Mike Bloomberg's doing. He's buying off people so they can stomach working for such a clown. But you know, so yes, that clip got me fired up.
It did. And yeah, by the way, quick little note on the paying people, and we've been saying that isn't necessarily gonna buy you loyalty. So Ken Klippenstein, friend of the show, whether he wants to be or not. So he had gotten leaked one of the NDAs for Bloomberg campaign staff from campaign staff. And just today he got leaked talking points on why Bloomberg endorsed Scott Brown against Elizabeth Warren. It is just Swiss cheese over there, because it's not on a foundation of people who actually look up to and admire Mike Bloomberg. It's just based on money.
Oh, and those talking points made no sense. It was that Scott Brown was an anti-NRA champion, because you know, Elizabeth Warren, on her off days, she goes to the gun range, and you know, put, like, eats shells of guns. Like, she's just like, that's how she brushes her teeth every morning.
See, that's what libs think gun nuts do. They eat bullets.
Right. No, I am, don't actually think that. I am a commie, so.
That's true. I noted. Bernie's been running his campaign in a very thuggy, Trumpy way. A thuggy way? Dude won't stop talking about Medicare. What are you talking about, thugs? But anyway, that's what he says. And I apologize, I don't remember the name of the host, but that she jumped in and said, or is it that he's winning? And that is an obvious point. I mean, a great point, she deserves credit for it. So 10 days ago, they're like, oh, kumbaya, let's not fight each other. Since then, Bloomberg had a terrible debate. His numbers are going down a little bit in national polling. Bernie has won two more contests. Yes, something has changed, but it's not that Bernie's been mean since then. The dude refuses to really attack in ads. But anyway, now you pointed out he said he hasn't been vetted. When on the debate stage they'll ask about healthcare, and also then they'll say Bernie's a socialist. Everybody on stage say why that's going to tank not only the presidency right, but all the other elections. I would say in those ways he's been vetted, but that is not what Tim O'Brien means. And what he does mean will become clear when he's asked to sort of give examples of that.
Bernie has all of this loopy stuff in his background, saying things like, you know, women get cancer from having too many orgasms, or toddlers should run around naked and touch each other's genitals to insulate themselves from porn. Why has this stuff not been more surfaced?
So she reacted, I think, the way most of us did. What?
No, I think everyone here, the three of us in the studio went, what?
So look, here is the thing. They are savvy enough that what he's talking about is not technically not something that hypothetically in some form Bernie said, but I want to be clear about what it was. So look, the thing about the connection between mental health and cancer was a thing that Bernie once said something about, do you know when? 1969. That was a very long time ago, and it was in response to, there was a doctor who had written books supposedly showing the link between declining morale and mental health and the propensity for cancer. Now, we can say that that was wrong. We can even describe that as loopy. But that was in response to a doctor's book, and it was 1,000 years ago that he said that.
I don't think it's a crazy thing to connect physical health ailments to sometimes mental health ailments. It's all one body. I mean, that's probably not actually accurate scientifically, but it comes from a place of trying to understand mental health and physical health as one sort of holistic thing.
I agree.
So, yeah, anyway. But my other point, though, is just like, oh, we're really going to run on Bernie's record being spotty because Iraq war, all of the, I mean, that's the first one I can come up with, but all of these things that other candidates have gotten wrong, you know, that they have, you know, a hard time standing on. Joe Biden is someone who's also been in public office for a similar amount of time. Bernie doesn't have any of those issues because he's been proven right all of, you know, in with history at his back. And that pisses people off so much because it's his record and his consistency that makes him so formidable. It's not like he's, you know, oozing sex appeal, right? like it's what he stands for and what he's always stood for and his consistency. That's his candidacy in a nutshell.
Yeah, and I just want to briefly address the second point that Tim O'Brien brought up, which was the kids running around touching each other's genitals. Because what he wants you to believe is that Bernie Sanders wants kids to get it on. You will be shocked, I think, to find out that that is not what Bernie was talking about. And let's just be clear, when I give you what Bernie actually said that he's referring to, understand that this is not as old as the cancer 1969 comment. This is from 1972, he said this. Now, if children go around naked, they're liable to see each other's sexual organs and maybe even touch them. Terrible thing. If we raise children up like this, it'll probably ruin the whole pornography business. Not to mention the large segment of the general economy, which makes its money by playing on people's sexual frustrations. Now that you've seen the quote, does anyone agree that there is not something weird about our culture and indeed many cultures that we like, obviously we make people feel a ton of shame and fear around sexuality. Violence is totally cool, cut people's heads off, but your body, oh my God, you should hide it. Don't let anyone ever see it. And yes, obviously tons of money is made off of the generation of that sort of suspicion and fear and, you know, envy and all of that. Bernie was right about that in 1972. And look, Tim O'Brien obviously read the quote, but he hopes that you won't.
there's not much more to add.
No, no, unfortunately not. But if that's the sort of vetting that they're apparently expecting to do, God only knows what quotes they're going to come up. And they're hoping that Bloomberg will be able to drop a couple of quick lines in the debate stage, and no one will actually check to see what was really said. We will try to do that as quickly as we can. Okay, with that, we are going to take a short break. We come back. A Bernie staffer has been fired. We're going to give you the details after this.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
So if a candidate has done something bad, that's what you'll focus on. If you don't have that, if they've said something bad, you'll focus on that. If you don't have that, if their supporters have done something bad, you'll focus on that. But if you have to retreat all the way back to the supporters saying something bad, well, then you are a mainstream media figure trying to take down Bernie Sanders, because that's what they have and that's what they've been talking about. It doesn't matter how many times Bernie Sanders says that I in no way endorse any sort of harassment coming from my supporters, they will continue to then just say, yeah, but they do it. And let's talk about today's update in this area. The Daily Beast has a scoop. A person who worked for Bernie Sanders, technically, had been saying mean things online and has been fired. So using the account PermaBen, Ben Mora, a regional field director for Sanders' campaign based in Michigan. So understand, not his number two, not his number three, not his number 50. It's someone who worked in Michigan for him, had a private Twitter account where they indeed, yes, attack other Democrats as well as their family members, surrogates, journalists, and other people on a variety of very personal terms. So we're going to give you examples of this. Former South Bend Mayor Pete Buttigieg, quote, is what happens when the therapist botches the conversion. And his husband, Chasen Moore, predicts will be busted for running a meth racket in 10 years. Senator Elizabeth Warren, a frequent subject of Moore's private account, is a dumb Okie, an adult diaper fetishist. So you can see it's very serious. And who looks like S and who lied about having Native American ancestry to get into Harvard. Understand for the purposes of this, if it matters at all, that this individual does identify as gay himself. So that is the
it
context.
Does, I think it does matter.
Of course it does.
Talk about that later.
I want to give another example or two, because when you, so that last paragraph that came from the big scoop where the Daily Beast found out about this individual's private Twitter account. And so when you write it like Pete Buttigieg's husband will be busted for running a meth racket, then that just seems like, well, that seems like really vicious. But I want to read the whole thing. And it's not that it's not an attack, but that it's coming from a slightly different point of view. So Buttigieg has the vibes of a housewife whose slow burning repression is leading to an inevitable psychotic break. Mark my words, in 10 years, he will go missing and then resurface in Fort Lauderdale after getting busted for running a meth racket with a bunch of Guatemalan twinks.
That is funny.
So look, that's obviously an attack. You can say it's personal, don't attack the family members of a presidential candidate. I get all of that. But when you read that paragraph, obviously that person is to some extent joking, clearly.
It's disingenuous to say otherwise. Look, I get why Bernie Sanders let him go, right? Mm-hmm. You have to make decisions as a campaign. It was not smart of him to have this private Twitter account. That said, I'm super uncomfortable with the way that Ben Mora has been attacked and his name dragged through the mud throughout social media and online, and the Daily Beast going after him in this way.
In multiple articles now.
Yeah.
For this individual's private Twitter account. Again, this was private.
Private.
Those people that are being attacked in it could not see those tweets.
Exactly. And what it's also just missing a huge piece of the puzzle, which is that this is a gay man. It's kind of his burner Twitter account. And if you you have gay friends, and sometimes, I don't know, you follow gay accounts like I do on Instagram and stuff, like this is more culturally sometimes like the meme culture of some gay online culture. I've said culture three times, but do you know what I'm saying? Like they're making jokes.
You have to understand the context, the cultural context.
The cultural context is it makes this, you're being willfully ignorant if you ignore that cultural context. And this reads like a lot of those funny, you know, kind of catty accounts that I follow. And some of those things are offensive, sure, but he never thought anyone would see them. This was just jokes with his friends. My gay friends and I will have like group chats that might say things that people would find offensive. I feel like it's just so.
I've got some screenshots from that actually.
Right.
So.
Right. So, you know, I just feel so uncomfortable and bummed for this guy, even though it wasn't smart to have this account. I get it. Mm-hmm. But that's really where I think the criticism should stop.
Yeah. So just briefly to give you another idea. So I can only imagine how some news outlets are going to describe this tweet like a physical threat against former presidential candidate. Ben Mora had tweeted, Hillary Clinton should literally be catapulted off the planet.
Well, that's hilarious.
That's just a joke. I mean, yes, it expresses that he doesn't like Hillary Clinton, but it's a joke. You can't catapult someone off the planet. Nobody's got a catapult big enough or powerful enough. Like, I think we all understand that, right? It's not an actual threat. And so they fired him. Okay, they fired this regional director in Michigan for what could have been described in a different Daily Beast article as, in the context of Bernie Sanders being attacked for people not affiliated with his campaign saying rude or offensive things on Twitter, he set up a private account to say that to make sure that none of these people would ever see those things. That's one way you could have described this. And so look, I get that they're going to fire him. They don't need this when they're being attacked. It sucks for him, obviously, because he seems like he did the right thing. He made it private. But I understand that they're gonna let him go, even though it's still gonna be the first question probably tonight at the debate. Pete Buttigieg is going to bring this up for 10 minutes straight.
Yeah, the real villain, I think, in this story is not Ben Mora. It's not the Sanders campaign who had to make a strategic move here and fire this lower level employee. It's the Daily Beast for thinking this is newsworthy. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you didn't drudge this up, none of those people would have ever saw those very mean tweets that you say are so toxic and offensive. Those are just inside
That's
jokes
true.
With friends. You're the one revealing this to the world.
Yeah.
So journalists have to make decisions about what's newsworthy and what's worth covering. You do it every day. I do it as well. This is not newsworthy.
Yeah. Just as sort of an example, so coming from our point of view, we've done a lot of critical coverage of Pete Buttigieg at one point, certainly Biden throughout, recently Mike Bloomberg. How many videos have I made about a thing a Bloomberg fan tweeted?
Well, they would say that's because the Bloomberg fans are just so kind.
Go on Twitter. Buttigieg fans are not predisposed to love Sanders or Sanders fans. You don't think that I could go into my replies and find some stuff that people who like Pete Buttigieg said to me? Have I ever made a video about that? Or something that a Biden supporter has said online? Those things exist. I will not say necessarily that they're as common, but they certainly exist. We don't focus on them because we choose to focus on the statements and actions of the politicians themselves. I would love to see opponents of Bernie Sanders do the same.
And lastly, because Bernie has mostly young supporters and has way more young supporters, so there's just more of them online.
Yeah.
That's the function of it.
100%.
If the rest of those candidates, if Buttigieg didn't have a supporter that was under 7 years old, or Biden the same way, they would be online doing the same exact thing. It is so silly.
Yes. It is. Okay, we'll continue to track the story as the Daily Beast continues to update it with more breaking news coming up for the next few days. But anyway, we are going to take a short break. We come back, the top 10 VP picks that we would like to see for Bernie Sanders after this. With Bernie Sanders now 3-for-3 in primary contests in the popular vote, and looking like he's gonna have a great next couple of weeks, we decided we're gonna get way ahead of ourselves and make some suggestions for the 10 people we would like to see him pick as VP. Emma Vigeland of Rebel HQ is with me. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Glad to have you here. So we each sort of have 5. We're gonna alternate.
Yeah.
We're gonna see if there's some overlap, which there might be.
Mm-hmm.
If there is, feel free to just hold and then reveal it when you reveal your number.
I shall hold and reveal.
Okay, and maybe we'll give some honorable mentions if there's time after.
I would like to mention some people who can't be actually eligible for his vice presidential pick. Like Pramila Jayapal would be a very top pick, but she was born outside of the United States. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who is too young. Ilhan Omar, who is also born outside of the United States, not eligible to be vice president. So I just want to put those 3 out there because—
Good note.
They're awesome.
Yes, good note there. Okay, with that, let's launch into it with my number 5, which is going to be Ro Khanna, who's one of my favorite congressmen. And I will say there are not a lot of men that I considered for the VP pick because I do think it's very important that we not always have 2 men on the ticket. But look, he has a great record both independently and working in conjunction with Bernie Sanders. I can't think of an ally on national security and foreign policy issues that has done the more work with Bernie Sanders. He's been a leader in the fight to stop military intervention in Iran, to break off our support for the Saudi war on Yemen. He's great on a number of different issues. And so if Bernie was going to go with a man, that is who I would suggest for him.
And my number 5 is also Representative Ro Khanna.
No!
Yes.
Right off the bat overlap.
Right. Well, poor Ro, he doesn't get past 5 for either of us. But I agree that he probably strategically should pick a woman. But you know, I put him down at 5 because California, it's a blue state, doesn't have as much strategic importance in terms of if he were to select a man, perhaps he would select one from a state that was more of a battleground state. But Representative Ro Khanna has a close working relationship with Bernie Sanders, was one of the first to endorse Bernie Sanders. It just would make a lot of sense. And it would be coming full circle, bringing that peace policy, that anti-intervention, that genuine anti-intervention as opposed to just playing at it, bringing that kind of perspective to the White House in a real way and a fundamental change of American politics.
I agree. I don't think it's going to happen, but he's got the double seal of approval here from the Damage Report. My number 4 is technically not possible for reasons that she laid out, but I'm picking AOC for my number 4.
I knew you were going to go emotional. I said this before the show. John's going to pick things that aren't even possible.
Don't pick it. Don't describe it as emotional. I realize I'm screaming as I don't describe it as emotional.
Oh, yes.
It's a good pick. Here, look, before I get to the substance of why, here's the obvious problem is that constitutionally she's not old enough. Who cares, honestly? What has the Constitution meant in our country for the whole time, but especially the past few years? They're not abiding by any of it anymore, and that is literally the dumbest part of it. She can serve in the House, but she can't be VP. Serving the House in many ways is more important than being VP, but she would be an absolutely awesome ally of his, overlapping on all of the most important issues. She could help to shepherd through the Green New Deal. It would set her up very well for her own presidential run, which is definitely gonna happen. I'm not being emotional, I can't wait for it to happen. She would be an awesome debater going up against Mike Pence. She'd be great on the campaign trail. It would be Bernie Sanders who'd been holding down like the sort of New Deal era Democratic philosophy for literally decades, allied with the future of the Democratic Party.
I didn't realize we were living in fantasy land and trying to do
my next pick is Baby Yoda, so.
Right. Well, I have a much less, a more realistic, pragmatic pick. I specifically went this route because I knew you were gonna pick AOC, and I knew it doesn't make any sense because it can't happen.
It makes sense. Take it to the Supreme Court.
That's
honestly
a really stupid hill to die on. Okay.
Well, I gotta choose one.
She could be the head of the EPA. She could do all of these other things.
That's true.
Okay. So my number 4 pick is Representative Mark Pecan. And
okay,
he is the head of the Progressive Caucus. I only edged out him with Ro Khanna because of his strategic importance, just basically being from Wisconsin. And also, he is someone behind the scenes who's really important that a lot of people don't report on, because as the head of the Progressive Caucus, he's someone, though, that has goodwill with both the left and the Pelosi wing of the party, so it could be something strategic. Again, this is a rational choice. This is not something that's very sexy.
No, that's fine. And look, I consider that too, trying to bring someone who would make it a little bit easier for the Nancy Pelosi types to come on. I don't necessarily have those people on my list, but I did consider a few. So my number three is going to be
Harry Potter.
No, it would be Ron, stupid. Harry Potter, who's handed everything. Ron worked for it, okay? And he never got any recognition. Anyway, my number three will be Hermione Granger. No, my number three is gonna be Stacey Abrams. Now this is, I have a couple of picks that I think would be great as the sort of VP that's there to make one thing happen. And so she would be there, tasked with the mission of and given the authority to make sure that we have an actual democracy. That she would spend 4 years, maybe 8 years, eviscerating voter suppression in the many forms that it comes, helping to overhaul the way gerrymandering works. I understand it's a federal position, but she could work in tandem with people in the states to make sure that we have an actual democracy that we were like raised to think that we had. That's what she's been working on. And I think that that's what she could do as VP. I have not loved some of her recent commentary around Mike Bloomberg. This is with the assumption that that is an outlier, but she's done great work throughout her career, and I think that she could continue that as VP.
And what this would do would be to create goodwill as well with the Democratic establishment. Mm-hmm. She has created a lot of goodwill for herself with the bigwigs in the party, because she's kind of, I would say, ideologically a blank slate. When she stands for a lot of good things and standing against voter suppression, sure, but like I don't really know exactly where she would go when it comes to Medicare for All or something like that. She's not someone who's taken a ton of hardline policy stances, mm-hmm. Because she ran for Georgia and not on the national stage, but has a lot of, again, connections with the Democratic Party. So that's a really good pick. My number three is Representative Rashida Tlaib.
Interesting.
So obviously
I'm a big fan.
Right. So she's born in the US, so she's eligible, and also from Michigan. So I'm kind of going a little old school here with my geostrategy, right? But also a longtime ally of his. I think she's a fighter. And a long time. I just mean in this presidential campaign, because she's not been in Congress for very long. But she brings that activist fire that I think is so inherent in his presidential campaign, mm-hmm. and would be a great pick for him. She's a really strong progressive, as we all know.
I agree. She certainly is. My number two is going to be Pramila Jayapal. And I'm going to admit, I did not know that she was born outside of the United States and thus is not constitutionally eligible. But hey, take it to the Supreme Court, like I said with AOC. This, like with Stacey Abrams, is a pick to accomplish a mission. She has been pushing for Medicare for All. She's a big defender of it. She's endorsed Bernie Sanders. She would be there to help do the most massive overhaul of a major part of the American economy and, you know, all of that that we've had in our entire history. She's got the pedigree. She understands the law better than like literally anyone, like right up there with Bernie Sanders. I think that she would do a great job in that way. She's a great progressive too in general, obviously, but
I love her. I mean, if she were born in the United States, she would be in my top. She would be in my top three for sure. She's awesome. One of the most underrated progressives in the country, I would definitely
say. I agree.
So speaking of underrated progressives, my number two is Representative Barbara Lee. So the one hiccup here is that she initially endorsed Kamala Harris for strategic reasons.
I found that out during my research as well.
because she's from California, but that does not square with who she has been as a progressive member of Congress. The sole vote against the AUMF back in the day. We're talking about anti-war voices with Ro Khanna. She's been one of the strongest anti-war voices in the history of the United States.
For decades.
And she just has a great way about her. She's just so humble and like a great legislator and someone who has really paid her dues in Congress for a really long time, well-respected, obviously came close to getting that leadership, Joe Crowley's old leadership position, but just short because she's too progressive. I think she'd be great for Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, she's awesome. And yeah, I didn't love the endorsement, but there are people online whose thing is like, hey, this person who you think is awesome, here's a reason you should hate them now.
Right.
I'm not one of those people. For all that she's done, she gets to do quite a bit.
She kind of gets a free pass.
Obviously.
Yeah.
So look, my number one might be fairly obvious at this point, considering what has already shown up. But look, I love all my picks. Be perfectly happy with all of them, even though two of them are invalid.
Okay, the Chiron gives it away.
But it's there. Okay, no, it's Tina Turner. So look, this is different than some of the other picks to shepherd through a major piece of legislation. This is because she would be like the sword at his side. Like, this is like the fighter, the bulldog, the person who is going to not only like set the campaign trail on fire, but is going to back him up as the defender that he both deserves and needs, by the way. It would again, like with some of the others, set her up for her own potential run in the future. You, for all the reasons, obviously the policy reasons, we've interviewed her multiple times, you know my feelings. I think that she has a lot of what individually make these people good, all in one package.
She's a state senator for a short amount of time. I don't think that that's the kind of, you know, resume that Bernie Sanders would want for his VP pick. Not that she's not unreal and amazing. She, I think, better in a press role because she's such an amazing speaker and someone who can be that bulldog and someone who can be that fighter. It's better to do in a public forum, in my view.
That would be fine. But look, I get that she was a state senator, but she also has worked now for years as, you know, working with, you know, Our Revolution. And like, that's an important activist role too. I don't think that electoral politics should be the only way
I get
to be considered.
That said, my number one is Elizabeth Warren.
Oh.
Yeah. So we're talking about Sen Elizabeth. There we go. That's just, she's no last name required. This would be the ultimate unity move in the sense that there's been a lot of divisiveness, but it would come full circle. Now, I'm going to get a ton of hate for this pick, but I just think it makes the most sense. Mm-hmm. I just really do. Bring the progressive wing and the party back together. Let her wash her hands clean of many of the mistakes that she's made in the past. Mm-hmm. And it's not risky to appoint a senator from Massachusetts, a blue state, to the vice presidential position. You're not going to lose that seat to a Republican.
It is a Republican governor.
Right.
Who would be appointing at least for some period.
Some period, you're right. But yeah, okay, that's a good point that I completely forgot.
So look, if you're going to send hate to her, at me on all of it because I agree with her 100%. She's not on my top five, but that does not mean that I don't agree with all of her reasoning.
Yeah.
I do. I would say one of the main reasons is Bernie comes from a state that has a Republican governor, hypothetically would replace him with, at least for a period of time, with a Republican. That would also happen with Massachusetts. In the short term, a two Republican senator swing, hypothetically, is pretty devastating to getting his agenda across. So that was important to me strategically. But I agree with you. It would be a great unity move. And if she worked her butt off for him the way he did for Hillary, you know, in 2016, I think that would buy back a lot of the respect that a lot of progressives had for her.
And again, ideologically on paper, they're aligned,
yes,
but it just is, it's how she's campaigned recently that has put people off, not her legislative history besides the anti-war stuff, I get.
Yeah.
But when it comes to senators, she's pretty much as progressive as it gets without Bernie Sanders, you know, being there. So,
okay. If you're on YouTube or anywhere where you can leave a reply or want to tweet us someone you think we might have left off, feel free to do that. With that, we are going to take a short break. A candidate is going to join us on the other side. Joining us now is congressional candidate for California's 8th District, James Ehlers. Welcome to the Damage Report.
Thank you, John and Emma. Thank you for having me.
Very glad to have you on. So let's start off with the beginnings, basically. We saw that on your website, it said that you had never planned on running for office, which I think is how most people approach that sort of thing. So what was the turning point?
Yeah, so I'm born and raised in this area. I grew up in a family of six kids in a working class family. And, you know, growing up, now I have my own kids and my own family, and I want the best for them. So looking at our local politics, we are known, I've learned this, we're known as the state legislator as the forgotten people. So this is an area that doesn't get a lot of attention. In terms of our congressman, he's absent most of the time. And a few months ago, I found out that he's actually not running again. So I was looking at, you know, okay, who can I get excited about? Who can you know, give us some energy to get some stuff done? And I was looking at the candidates, and on the Republican side, there's two people that are fighting over who is, you know, the Trump Republican. And on the Democrat side, there was someone that is not very specific with policies, pretty vague, and they're accepting money from 30 different corporations. So when looking at the whole picture, I'm like, okay, if I want to make an improvement in this area, if I want to make a better future for my kids, right now the choices aren't very good, so I need to run. So that's how I got to that point.
So you know, I've seen you're a vocal supporter of a former candidate Andrew Yang.
Yes.
And so I'm curious, what are some of the components of Andrew Yang's platform that he ran on that you would want to work on as a congressman?
Yeah, so this is a great question, and it's something that the Yang Gang's very adamant about. Personally, I feel like democracy dollars is even more important than UBI. Like, because right now, many of our areas are just overrun with corporate money to the point where nothing's getting done for our people, and there's only things getting done for corporate interests. So democracy dollars, for those of you that don't know, democracy dollars is a program that we would give every American $100 a year to be able to donate to the candidate of their choice. So the plan is with democracy dollars is to flush corporate money out of politics. That way we can get more people in there that actually, you know, care about the people and what's going on in the area versus corporate interests. So as you know, Andrew Yang has a ton of policies, a ton of awesome policies. Right now, again, one thing that inspired me to run is definitely democracy dollars, just because it is so important that we get this corporate money out of politics so that we can get back to being an actual democracy.
Mm-hmm. So one of the most important issues for me personally is dealing with the climate crisis. So I'm curious about your position on that. I mean, we noted that on your website, you don't mention the Green New Deal, which is one of the big topics of conversation around that issue nationally over the past couple of years. So what is your approach dealing with the environment and climate change?
Yeah, so professionally, I actually, you know, help people and businesses install solar panels on their homes and their buildings. So climate is very important to me. It's something that I feel that benefits everyone, and so it's a win-win for everyone, right? So it's one of my most important issues is to prevent what's coming and to make sure that we're doing everything possible to empower people and businesses to be able to take control of their energy costs, to help the environment, everything. So I'm super passionate about that for sure. I think it's really important.
You know, I want to talk about one other component of your platform too. It's in a section, family and social cohesion. You talk about shorter work weeks, which is something that we've discussed a few times on the show.
Yeah.
How do you see the work week of the future looking?
Well, as you know, Andrew Yang, one of his big talking points is automation. Now, there are, you know, everybody has their opinion where, okay, AI isn't at that point yet. You know, we have some time to go, but to be completely honest, it doesn't take high level AI to be able to automate a lot of these jobs away. So I think it was Microsoft that did a test in Japan where they implemented a four-day work week, and productivity actually went up. So there are a lot of things that we'd have to work with. Like, obviously, we'd need a higher minimum wage to be able to make up for that gap. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, people can do more in less time these days and be more fulfilled. Another issue is, you know, depression and anxiety are all-time highs. The most common cause, like the most common unnatural cause of death is now overdose and suicide. It used to be car accidents. So we need to do more for our people to kind of alleviate that stress. So if we can be a higher product, like we could be as productive, if not higher production, with a lower work week for our people, I think we should pursue that.
I certainly agree. And I've always been surprised by the amount of pushback you get from a lot of people at the possibility of taking down the work week. I did want to let people know, since unfortunately we have a limited amount of time to delve into all of your platform, that you do have on YouTube, you have an extensive video talking about why you're running for Congress, which is really interesting. I haven't seen a lot of congressional candidates who have something like that available, which provides quite a bit of information. But if people would like to know more about what you're running to do and all of that, where can they find that information?
Yes, my website is just my name, jamesellers.com, last name spelled E-L-L-A-R-S. They can also find me on Twitter at Ellers. So everything's there, links to everywhere. So my website, jamesellers.com.
James Ellers, thank you for coming on the show. It was great getting a chance to get to know you a little better. Perhaps we can check in a little bit further on into the race.
Absolutely. Thank you again for the opportunity.
Thank you. We're going to take one last break here. When we come back, a little bit more to close out the show. At the last debate, Mike Bloomberg received really tough questioning about his past sort of sexual harassment comments and actions, the policy of rampant NDAs. And I believe that his campaign thinks that they've gotten past that. In the answer, even back then, he made it all about like what the corporation has done and what it's now doing. But I want to be very clear about what he has done. And so I was very excited earlier today when I saw that Samuel Finkelstein had spread some of the contents of one of his sexual harassment lawsuits from 1998. So we're going to give you a couple of excerpts. What I want you to focus on is not just what the company was accused of doing, but what he as an individual in the late 90s was accused of doing. So here's a screenshot from that. Talking about the company, yes, openly encouraged the general degradation of women. But they said that this is from its male managers, employees, from Chief Executive Officer Bloomberg on down. This was not just that he presided over this sort of thing, but that he took part in it personally and repeatedly.
Yeah, or like he said in the debate, or you know, they just didn't like a joke I told. The callousness
it's
is
really
crazy.
Their fault, I think.
Crazy, he is so arrogant.
Yes, and maybe that'll come through as we continue on with the screenshots.
Yes.
So, on virtually a daily basis, you had some of these behaviors by Bloomberg and his male executives. Repeated and unwelcome sexual comments, repeated and unwelcome sexual overtures, repeated and unwelcome overt sexual gestures, including upon information and belief, unauthorized touching and inappropriate acts. So, non-consensual sexual touching is what we call sexual assault. And again, this is not just the company culture. This is the candidate himself.
Sounds
and
a
not
little
1969.
More,
this is in the late 90s.
Sounds a little more like it sounds like a little bit more than a joke that he told.
Yeah, that they received poorly.
Right.
So let's continue. So let's see. We have women sales personnel were encouraged by Bloomberg to, among other things, wear sexually provocative clothing, short skirts, would be an advantage for promotion. Women who applied for sales positions were required to meet criteria of sex appeal. Women sales personnel who were less attractive or who were married were ridiculed. And new mothers and recently married women lost lucrative portions of their sales territory, including pay cuts and inferior bonuses because they were no longer sexually available to Mike Bloomberg and other executives at the Bloomberg company.
Yeah, I mean, this just reeks of the entitlement of big money interests and financial firms on Wall Street in New York City that has destroyed our country. Obviously, or it did for a while, you know, with the financial collapse. It's indicative of the same arrogance that we saw throughout those institutions. And it was a culture of just degradation of women, of a boys club. I mean, just watch Wolf of Wall Street. You can get a picture of how people were treating women and how there was this fraternal nature at these financial firms. And Bloomberg was a part of that. Even if he comes off as unassuming and sort of meek in many ways, despite arrogant at the same time, he was a man in positions in a position of enormous power and privilege. He's one of the richest people in the country, top 10.
Yeah.
So imagine getting these comments at your place of work and being touched inappropriately by that person with so much power.
I
have no idea what triggered that. I haven't touched it in minutes.
it would just absolutely, it could wreck your career because you would be so intimidated.
Yeah, you'd be worried every day that if you did the wrong thing, said the wrong thing, it was perceived to be the wrong thing. This is Bloomberg, like in New York. How can you like turn on him or be perceived to? Like that would be the end of your career. And that's why he's faced so many charges like this, so many different cases. Anyway, maybe we'll hear more about it at tonight's debate.
Let's hope.
Thank you, as always, for joining me on the show.
Thank you, John.
You're gonna be leading the second hour. I'll be leading the first. So look forward to both of us on the main show, as well as J.R. Jackson and debate coverage too. All that and more later on tonight.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.